Okay, I have something very special for you. I have in the studio with me some spoken word artists, performing writers. They are also like to be known as, who are here for the Sydney Writers Festival. I'll get you gentlemen to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Joe Sree. I'm a performance poet down from Brisbane.
I'm Scott Sandwich. I'm a Sydney boy.
Hello, I'm Miles Merrill, and I write and perform monologues, poems, and stories.
Thank you so much for joining us. You're here with the organisation Word Travels. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I'll go on, Miles.
Okay. It's an arts organisation that creates literary and literacy programs around Australia, a little bit in New Zealand, China, Indonesia. And mainly we run the Australian Poetry Slam, which is like a program for performing writers. That's kind of a national thing where people in small towns jump up and go, this is what is on my mind. And their local community chooses two people to send them to a state final. And at the state final, the state basically chooses two people to go to a national thing. But so we run that. It's a big national program.
Before, we were talking about what makes slam poetry a unique art form and a great way for people to express themselves. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I guess for me, I find it's... I think its advantage is that it's very literal and direct. So for some people, poetry, particularly old school page poetry, can be a bit inaccessible. Often the metaphors are very abstract. You can read a poem and not quite know what it's about. Whereas I think for particularly slam poetry, but performance poetry in general, it's a lot more accessible. You don't need to be literate to understand a performance piece. You can just listen and say, oh, I know what that poet was trying to say. And in that sense, I think it tends to speak to cross sections of the community who maybe can't access other forms of literature as readily. So you find a lot of crossover between the slam poetry scene and the hip hop scene, particularly down here in Sydney and also in Melbourne, but even up in Brisbane. And I think, yeah, for young people, it's one of the easiest ways to get excited about poetry.
Yeah, just like a really, direct way to communicate with your audience. I know when I was playing in a band, there were occasionally just times where it's like you just feel you just can't connect.
Yeah.
And just like you are kind of hiding sometimes and being more abstract. But with like slam poetry, it is just nothing, and you just talk directly, and you can see them and look them in the eye, and it's just and you can get abstract, you can get sort of strange, or you can get, you know, as direct and clear as possible.
I've heard Scott do some really wanky pieces.
Yeah. Really wanky. You got no idea. Can't stop this machine.
The other thing about it is that for young people wanting to get involved in an art form and express themselves, it doesn't require an instrument, it doesn't require a cast, a crew, or anything. It's like,
or a degree,
you can write it, or a degree. I mean, you could be a 7-year-old in Orange and you write it and you jump up on the microphone and you say what's on your mind, and there's an audience there. I mean, hopefully there's an audience there. But yeah, it's an immediate like artist to audience connection.
And a lot of joy as well.
Do you have any cool stories about people reacting to your performances?
I did this Finnish poem once to I was in Helsinki, and I performed their national epic in sort of my colloquial Australian style.
Their national epic?
Yeah, they've got this huge, huge book of poetry, like their creation story. It's like 1,000 pages long in rhyming couplets.
A bit like The Man from Snowy River.
Yeah. It's just crazy. It's like kind of what like Lord of the Rings was based on. It's just this huge epic trolling tale. And I performed it to this like audience who knew it backwards, and the joke was that I didn't understand it, and they just thought I was the biggest idiot. They loved it. Like, they just love watching someone else trying to understand their culture and just telling them how confused I was about them. It was glorious.
Yes, and I was a guest poet in Broken Hill, and I was doing lots of workshops with the kind of indigenous community, but as part of being the local guest, I got invited to the Poets in the Pub thingy that had been going for the past 20 years, not realizing that it was like the white leaders of the town who just hadn't brought their big white hoods with them. And they're like, you know, looking at me going, he's talking about black people. And afterward, a woman came up to me and she's like, you're so brave. I said, what do you mean? And she said, to talk about the Coons that way.
Oh, my God.
God.
Yeah. And I turned to the person who'd hired me. I was like, could you walk me to my hotel, please?
Those are the best gigs, though, the ones where you make people a bit angry.
Exactly.
You know, you read a poem and you see someone in the audience comes up to you afterwards and says, you shouldn't be talking about that, mate.
Yeah.
Well, I just
reached
did.
You. I reached yeah. you. Direct I mean, communication.
Because we're so used to like performing to our, you know, warehouse party crowd who
yeah, preaching
love
to the converted.
Us.
Yeah.
Exactly. They're like, yeah, everything you say is lefty and so are we.
Yeah.
You know, but as soon as you get dropped in the pub in Broken Hill, you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah, okay. I love that environment.
Yeah. You got to challenge people, you know.
And I think you are all going to challenge us here this morning on the Friday Daily. Is that correct? Are we going to get to see a bit of a performance here in the studio?
Yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, go for it. Do it.
Go for it. Okay,
yeah,
I should. I was warned to put a language warning on this artwork. Don't go overboard, but by all means, use some colourful
language. What's our time
like.
Limit? Is it 2 minutes each?
Oh, we have about 10 minutes to spend with you, gentlemen.
Oh, okay.
So,
oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
All right. Well, I'll start with a 2 minute piece, which is about retired revolutionaries and people who are too lazy to be activists anymore.
I've got one of those too.
We were lions once. We were once lions. And we were lions once. We used to laugh like thunder gods. Our mirth made the earth shake, earthquake. So much joy, it made my stomach ache. We were content. We had never learned what misery meant. We used to run like bushfires, fast and unstoppable. The wind at our backs, our backpacks were light, and our feet were dark with street dirt, and we never got hurt. We used to ride like Mongolians, standing up on the pedals, always downhill, broken brakes, breakneck, and when the dust settled, we made chain grease, war paint, and thanked the sun for the day. We used to fight like cyclones, and we danced like warriors, lightning limbs. We were giants, fearless, 3 meters tall, balls of raw energy weathered every squall. See, we were lions once. I'm not sure why we aren't lions anymore. I know we didn't grow any older, but now the world seems colder and I miss the days. We used to love with our whole hearts. Now we're more cautious. Too many false starts. Base jumping makes us nauseous. We used to light fires and fight lies with liquid lungs. We'd pry open closed minds with a flick of our tongues. We used to roar our convictions every note we sung. We used to stand for something. We used to stand for something. We used to stand for something. We used to yearn for evolution, but now the world has turned and our revolts have dissolved into a diluted solution, and we've devolved into the mirror people, no longer able to admire the night sky because our necks are sore from too much navel gazing, as though being too small to save the whole world is a valid excuse for giving up altogether. Bullshit. We could be more than this. We should be more than this. We were lions once, and now we're motherfucking kittens, sitting in a windowless room. Bob Dylan and or Marley turn loud to drown down the sounds of our own hypocritical apathy, willfully ignorant, washing our hands of the sins of the mainstream while drinking from its tributaries, having forgotten that one raised voice is enough to start an avalanche. Jaded idealists, introverted Epicureans, we are lazy, powerless, selfish wastes of space. And we were lions once.
Nice.
Woo.
Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. Off their clothes.
Thank one's you so much. Yeah, everyone's taking off their clothes here in the studio.
I've got hot, yeah.
Right. It was a bit warm.
It's the magic of radio.
Too intense.
That was great. Thank you so much.
Mm. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And to all the listeners, this whole performance will be up online on 2SER.com shortly after the show, and thank goodness for that.
Because it was too fast to understand all of
it. No, I mean, I want to listen to it again. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I can do one. I'll keep it different in tone, I guess. Stop me if you've heard this, of course, but shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Now, I realised recently I've always been reading it wrong, because I always put emphasis on the word shall, like a chump. But there's no question here, and it's not a will I won't I situation, because he will compare you, goddammit, and he does so promptly, much to the poor summer's day's dismay, left shrivelled and half dead in a pile of its own bile. Emphasize I. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Because all other poets of less talent, skill and fame, they compare their loved ones to big, perfect things. He asks, shall I now be the one to make that same boring, superficial simile like the rest of those unimaginative buggers? I, he says, will never do that. In the entire collection of sonnets, he does not. But now, he continues, I will anyway, just to prove to you why it's so pointless. I'm going to take the biggest, grandest and most widely understood idea of natural beauty and perfection. The purest summer's day. The toughest competition for comparison, full of dawn and roses and rainbows and, well, it's supposed to be too easy for the bard. He can normally turd this poem out in his sleep, but now it proves unworthy, inferior and inadequate compared to his love. See, the pure summer's day, it's unreliable, it changes, it passes and it ends. Its flaws are innumerable, but the young man that he writes this sonnet for has none. And this is what love does to everyone. His love is so strong that the very notion of comparison is a weak, pathetic compliment. It can only be fruitless. Words have been strung together to sound good, but ultimately mean squat. Hyperbolic comparison, for want of a better reference here, is a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury signifying nothing. Now, in the previous sonnets, he wrote about why he loves logically, systematically. You have a right to breed with me, he says. Don't worry about the details. We'll find a way, but your bloodline must continue so we can. Your beauty remains in this world, blah, blah, blah. After 17 sonnets of this forced, dribbling drivel, he finally has the courage to say, I love you just because I love you. You know, praise for the sake of praise, and he is begging for a better way to say it, but he just settles on an old, tired, used idea, a cliche, because he's just found out that even the greatest words of Shakespeare can never be enough.
Oh, take me now, Scott.
Bravo.
That is sweet.
Next layer of clothes, everyone. Take them.
So I got a piece about three stereotypes walk into a cafe.
I'll just stop you there say, if you've just tuned in, we're talking to some
very confused
spoken word. Yeah, you're probably confused. This is the Friday Daily on 2SER. We're speaking to spoken word artists / performing writers who are here for the Sydney Writers Festival. And we just heard a great piece from Scott Sandwich, and up before that, Joe Sree. And now Miles Merrill is going to show us his magic.
My magic. Okay, so this is three stereotypes walk into a cafe. It's called Monotype. I was working this cafe, right, over on Devonshire Street. Place get about 15 customers in 8 hours. Manager walks in. Yo, Mr. Big Man, what up? Man had the nerve to say to me, who told you to sit down, mate? Well, I stayed seated, cigarette dangling from my jaw. I said, fuck that. I ain't seen a single customer up here in over an hour. Punk ain't gonna be running my little butt up around up in here. Nobody up in here. You know what I'm saying? You should have seen his big old Australian jaw just about like dropped, hit the floor, right? I figured we was gonna have to duke it out, but old boy changed his tone. He come out with, mate, why don't you get me on the counter and cop me a piece of mud cake and make me a flat white while you're back there? Well, I ain't stupid, right? I mean, I am getting paid. So I do what old boss man say. Give me one of them butcher knives. You know, the kind we use to cut cakes with. And I dish him out a piece. I dish me one out, too. I sit back down. I say, sorry, but your mama made you a flat white. Ain't nothing I could do about that. And I study my cake, right? He's steady standing there, steady clocking me. I look up. I say, what you looking at, nigga? I'm trying to eat my cake over here. He pick up that knife. Start to tremble, and you know, you can see the fear in his eyes, the rage in his lips. He come out with something crazy like, you call that a knife? That's not a knife. This is a, you call that a, that's not a knife. This is a knife. That's not a knife. This is a, you call, he just keep repeating it, you know, like one of them, like one of them robots when they got too much power surging through their circuits, exterminate, exterminate, exterminate. I mean, I knew old Uncle was crazy, but he never pulled no Crocodile Dundee shit on me before. You know, my bottom lip start poking out, how you say, involuntarily, right? Like I was fixing to say, what you talking about, Willis? Old swag wearing outback red dirt redneck about to jump me when one of them aboriginals walks in the door, right? One of them aboriginal fellas walks in the door like looking like he'd been out partying last night, kind of scraggly, you know. He don't see no knife. Nah, walk right up to Whitey's piece of cake laying on the table while he helping himself, while he eating it up. He say, hey brother, I got a piece of cake, brother. Hey brother, a piece of cake. Boss man turned around, knife in them pudgy hands, and he come out like a goddamn freight train. You black beast, get out, get out, get out now, like some rhino on the front lines of a hallucination. Homeboy come out with something crazy like, hey, Ebro, get out of my cafe. And it was something about seeing a black man stabbed through the hand by a white man that shocked me out of my chair, you know. I get up, I grab that raving boss by the back of his head, put my boot up his ass. Kick him out. You understand what I'm saying? Kick racism out of the World Cafe just in time with the number 378 bus to ding, 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 ding. Cut him down. Turn around. Wipe his hair grease off my hands. And brother man, aboriginal, ain't land on the floor like a victim. Nah, he's out the back door with a whole mud cake in the good hand. Bottle of Coca-Cola in the bleeding hand. All the cash register money spilling out of his pockets. And he's laughing down the alleyway like everything in this country belongs to him. Or he belongs to everything in this country. What do I know? I am just a stereotype, right? I just pick up a chair, throw it through the window, play some basketball, rap, eat some chicken, start a riot, and say it's one crazy country y'all living in, bro. Yeah.
A round of applause. A round of applause for our three spoken word artists here with us this morning on the Friday Daily, Joe Sree, Scott Sandwich and Miles Merrill. That was fantastic. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Can you tell us where we might be able to see you at the Sydney Writers' Festival?
Some of us are just, we're actually, the three of us are, and a few others are just hanging around the queues to get into shows and just like doing little small one-on-one performances to like surprise people. For
Well, they've got Queue Poetics, which is like poets in queues, but then there's also, what have we got today? We've got Mouth to Mic at 4 o'clock at the Wharf. Then we've got Spoken Four at 7. That's done at the Wharf as well. Tomorrow we're in Parramatta with a youth slam called the Rumble. And then what else have we got?
Tell them more about the youth slam. That's a good one.
Yeah, the youth slam's great. It's basically getting high school students in the Parramatta community in Western Sydney to jump up on the mic and spit whatever they've got. And the audience judges, and they get a prize. I think it's like $100 or something. So these guys are going to be the main features on the day at Parramatta, at the Riverside Theatre at 1 o'clock. Come and check it out. It's pretty amazing. And then Troubadours and Minstrels on Sunday. I could talk about it, but that's completely booked out, so it's probably best not to get more
don't even mention
that. Yeah, but it's good. It's like four poets in little alcoves around the rocks, and Scott was one of them last week.
Yeah, it's good fun.
Yeah.
Gorgeous little
man. Yeah, pretty cool.
Fantastic. Well, best of luck with all of it.
Thank you.
Thanks again for coming in.
Thanks for having
for
us.
Anyone who would love to hear those performances again, they will be online on the Friday Daily page shortly after the show. Gentlemen, enjoy the rest of your time here in Sydney. Anyone who's not originally
it's
from Sydney.
Yeah. Enjoy the rest of my time.
And enjoy the rest of the Sydney Writers' Festival. I know I will. We'll see you later.
Cheers. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Lucy.
You're welcome.